ബ്രഹ്മാനന്ദം പരമസുഖദം കേവലം ജ്ഞാനമൂർത്തിം ദ്വന്ദ്വാതീതം ഗഗനസദൃശം തത്വമസ്യാദിലക്ഷ്യം ഏകം നിത്യം വിമലമചലം സർവധീ സാക്ഷിഭൂതം ഭാവാതീതം ത്രിഗുണരഹിതം സദ്ഗുരും തം നമാമി. ഓം ശാന്തി ശാന്തി ശാന്തി. ഐ ഓഫർ മൈ സല്യൂട്ടേഷൻസ് ടു ദി ഗുരു സ്പിരിച്വൽ ടീച്ചർ ഹു ഈസ് ദി വെരി എംബോഡിമെൻ്റ് ഓഫ് ദി ബ്ലിസ് ഓഫ് ബ്രഹ്മൻ ദി ഗിവർ ഓഫ് ദി ഗ്രേറ്റസ്റ്റ് ബിയാട്ടിറ്റ്യൂഡ് ദി അബ്സല്യൂട്ട് ദി പെർസോണിഫിക്കേഷൻ ഓഫ് ദി ഹയസ്റ്റ് നോളജ് ഹു ഈസ് ബിയോണ്ട് ദി പെയർസ് ഓഫ് ഓപ്പോസിറ്റ്സ് ലൈക്ക് pain and pleasure, and untouched by evil like the sky, whom thou art that and other similar scriptural passages have in view, the one without a second, the eternal, the pure, the immovable, the witness of all mental modifications, abiding ever beyond all thoughts and attributes. Om peace. May there be peace in our hearts. May there be peace and harmony amongst all beings. And may there be peace everywhere in nature. Good morning to all of you. Some of you may be ready to heave a sigh of relief after long study extending over several months, 8-9 months. 12, 13 sessions, we are finally today concluding. We are studying the concluding portion, Sri Rama's instructions to Shabari on how to achieve pure devotion. Sri Rama starts with a simple introduction when he went to Shabari. We know the story part. Rama and Lakshmana were searching for Sita, who had been abducted by the demon king Ravana. And neither Rama nor Lakshmana had any clue about where she was and who had taken it away, what happened to her in the forest hermitage. She was not there. So they're going from place to place and so many things happen. And they come across a great demon who was actually a beautiful Gandharva. And due to some confrontation with Indra, he had been given that grotesque form of just being a big stomach, long arms and nothing else. So he was whatever came within the arms, purview of the arms, he would gather them and put him in the stomach. And Rama Lakshmana inadvertently walked into that snare, into the trap. Two arms are coming and closing them in. So Rama instantly understood what is the problem, and Rama Lakshmana, each one severs one of the arms of Kabandha, and in the immediate same moment, Kabandha stood there regaining his handsome Gandharva form. And then Kabandha expresses gratitude to Sri Rama, and he knows that Rama is in looking for Sita. But Kabandha gives the next clue. Sri Rama goes from one clue to another. Somebody directs him to some place, they direct him to some other place. This is the last but one clue. So Kabandha says there is a hermitage in the forest, gives the directions, and if you go there, an old lady is eagerly waiting for you, and she will give you the next clue. That will lead you to the location of Sita and eventually recovery of Sita. So Kabandha became a handsome Gandharva, goes to Gandharva Loka, where all the Gandharvas reside. And Rama goes in search of the hermitage in the forest. Finally, Rama Lakshmana come across a hermitage, and there was indeed an old, very old lady eagerly waiting for Rama and Lakshmana. Then Sri Rama greets Shabari, greets him, and Shabari is seeking something from Sri Rama, but Sri Rama himself took the initiative to give her detailed instructions on various spiritual practices, which will eventually lead to the attainment of pure devotion. Most of our teachers, all of our teachers, have extolled pure devotion as being the most superior thing, the superior thing. Pure devotion is even held higher than liberation by some people. So Sri Rama gives instruction. We have been studying that set of 14 instructions. Now the last instruction before he concludes his teaching, and the next thing happens. The last teaching we were discussing that last time was inquiry into the nature of reality. My nature means Sri Rama referring to himself as the Lord. Inquiry into the nature of reality. Tattva vicharo mama, he says, my nature. And then he simply mentions these 14 things, but he doesn't explain any of them in detail. How to do them, he doesn't say anything. So we have to look to the teachings of other saints to know how to practice these 14 different disciplines that Sri Rama gave to Shabari. The last one, Tattva Vichara, means inquiry into the nature of reality. What is God? Is there God? If so, what is God's nature? Is he a human-like person or she? Or what is he, form, with form, without form? What is the true nature of God? And what is my relationship to God? And what is all this nature? These questions arise in the mind of any thinking person. Various saints have given, based on their experience, their insight into the nature of all these three: the divine, the human, and the nature. We are not going to into all of those details. We just take a few saints, major teachings of a few saints, that'll give us ample clue, enough clue, to proceed on our own practice, always preferably under the guidance of a teacher, as Sri Ramakrishna says, teacher is necessary. Sri Ramakrishna said, God alone is real and the world is illusory. Illusory means unreal, transient, undependable. And we should not become attached to worldly objects. None of those worldly objects or experiences has any intrinsic potential to give us even an iota of happiness. The only source of happiness is God, the divine, and we have to strive by all means to experience the divine divinity within us and in all. That we have studied in detail, Sri Ramakrishna's teachings. When we studied the 8 aphorisms of Sri Ramakrishna, he mentioned all those steps that he wanted us to practice. Sri Ramakrishna said, very briefly, repetition of God's name and singing God's glories, renunciation of lust and greed, practice of truthfulness, and cultivating an intense longing for God, all of these under the guidance of a guru. That was the gist of Sri Ramakrishna's teachings, but many other things he said. We have studied those things before. Now, the Upanishads give a different approach, different methodology. In the Upanishad, the teacher says to the student is inquiring about the nature of reality. What is Brahman? Please teach me Brahman. Student approaches the teacher. Sometimes it happens to be the father himself. The teacher says that ultimate reality, which is called Brahman in the Upanishads and by other names in other scriptures, by other saints, is that ultimate cause from which the whole universe and all the beings evolve, by which everything is sustained, and unto which everything recedes back at the end of their cycle of existence. Inquiry into that. Tadvijignasasva, inquiry. He recommends inquiry. How to do the inquiry? The teacher says, by tapas. Tapasa brahma vijignasasva. By tapas. Tapas means, ordinarily we understand tapas to mean, translate it as austerity. austerity can be confusing. So many different kinds of austerities are there. Many are distinct. Three kinds are described in the Bhagavad Gita. Austerity is pertaining to the physical body. Austerity is pertaining to the speech faculty. And austerity is to purify the mind. Other teachers have prescribed different kinds of austerities, like going on a pilgrimage, doing charity, and repeating God's name, many different things. What does austerity mean in the Upanishadic context, tapas? In the Upanishadic context, austerity or tapas means a very sustained, persistent, systematic, clear, focused, unbiased, and analytical thinking on one topic. All the thing, you always think, everybody is always thinking. Even in dream also, some thoughts are going on, projected as dream. But our thinking is not in this way. It's like wherever the mind takes us, we go, not consciously. Whatever thought comes, we ride on that one. And it is not focused, it's not persistent. We don't think on the same topic. It becomes very difficult to do it in meditation. The mind has the habit of wandering from thought to thought, topic to topic. We all think. But the kind of thinking that the Upanishadic sages recommended, prescribed by using the word tapas is, it must be systematic thinking, not unregulated thinking. It must be clear thinking, not confused thinking, muddled thinking. It must be sustained and persistent. We don't persist in any one thought, we just go from one thought to another. When we have to persist on one topic, it becomes difficult. Persistent, focused, it must be focused on narrowly on one topic, not diffused over many different things. Unbiased, without any predilections and previous conceptions. Preconceptions, it must be analytical thinking, thinking with all these qualities. That is tapas. By tapas, one has to know Brahman. That is the only way to gain knowledge of the self. Not by reading books, not by listening to lectures, not by attending retreats. These all help. All these things help. Every little bit helps. But everything must lead us to that tapas, according to the Upanishadic approach. Thinking systematically. The word used in the text is vijignasaswa, inquire deeply, analytically, in a focused, systematic, clear manner. Jignasa means the desire to know something, to gain knowledge. In Bengali also we use the same word, jigesh koro, we say. Jigesh koro, inquire, ask, inquire. Inquiry. Same word, jignasa. Vijignasaswa. You inquire into the nature of reality after purifying the mind, making it relatively free from all the blemishes such as anger, lust, greed, etc. And that inquiry must be persistent and relentless. And the student goes back with that much instruction only he gets from the teacher. The student first thinks, what is that from which we all come, by which we are all sustained, and then to which we go back? He thinks, starts thinking like that. The first thing that occurs to him is maybe food, annam, brahmet, vyajanat. In a simple way, he starts his thinking. But it does not stop there. From food we all come, all their bodies are made of food, and by food we are sustained, and we die, the body becomes food. Merges in nature. So we could be annam, food. Then he thinks about it, but it's not convincing. He's not satisfied with that conclusion. Now, this cannot be. How can food be Brahman? Then everybody would eat food and become realized that. Then he goes back to the teacher, teach me some more. I want to know what really the nature of reality is. Inquiry is happening from lesser truth to higher truth. From lower truth to higher truth, as Swamiji said. That's the process in the Upanishad. Successively goes through various stages. We have seen that. Narada went through about 20 different stages under the guidance of Sanat Kumara until he finally came to the understanding of what Brahman is. All by tapas, systematic inquiry. That is the Upanishadic recommendation. Then the Puranas, various scriptures and numerous saints have suggested a wide variety of spiritual practices, disciplines, including but not limited to performing japa, repetition of God's name or mantra, chanting devotional hymns, ritualistic worship of various kinds, and meditation, and so many other things. Diverse approaches to one goal, namely achieving knowledge of God. That is the beauty of our spiritual heritage. There is no one path and everybody should follow that. There is no one path which is suitable for everybody. People are of different temperaments, abilities, and propensities. We all need our own approach. Swamiji said in the limiting case, every person has to carve out his or her own path to divinity. So much variety is there in the teachings. Then the Bhagavad Gita talks about, in the Gita, Sri Krishna talks about all the yogas, various yogas. Karma yoga, bhakti yoga, jnana yoga, dhyana yoga, all those things he talks about. But at the end, in the 18th chapter, he seems to emphasize more the work as worship. By doing one's own work, duty as worship, one achieves the highest perfection, he says in the 18th chapter. All work can be, barring immoral, illegal work, which you should not do at all for spiritual life. All the work that we do, secular, spiritual, the difference notwithstanding, must be done as worship, with the same devotion with which we do worship, and with same earnestness, and should be offered as our offering, our worship to the divine. By doing that, the mind becomes purified, rid of all impurities, and the way is paved for the realization of the highest reality. That is, he seems to put a little bit more emphasis on karma yoga, path of service and work, though he has talked about all the yogas. Narada and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they have both emphasized the path of devotion, mainly consisting in the uninterrupted repetition of God's name and mantra and singing God's names and glories. We have seen Sri Ramakrishna's instructions. Then Patanjali, in his Eightfold Yoga Aphorisms, which many of you studied with Swami Atmagyanandaji here in the Wednesday evening classes, Patanjali has prescribed 8 steps, beginning with moral, spiritual disciplines, yama, niyama, etc., culminating in the 8th step, which is the complete merger with the divine in samadhi. That is Patanjali's method. Swami Vivekananda has talked about all the 4 yogas. We are familiar with his teachings to some extent, all the 4 yogas, but he seems to again lay special emphasis on unselfish service. Unselfishness is God, he wrote in the Karma Yoga book. And he seems to place special emphasis on service as worship. And numerous other sages have recommended a wide array of disciplines to reach the same goal, namely to realize the ultimate reality, experience the divine within us. Now, Sri Ramachandra gave a long list of 14 disciplines, actually 9, but counting all these subdivisions, it becomes 14. He simply mentions them. Then when you look at the list of 14, I'm not going to repeat it because they have been listening to me for a long time about the 14 disciplines. Holy company, spiritual talk, devotional singing, serving teachers, seeing God in teacher, leading virtuous life, yama, niyama, daily worship, japa, all those things he mentioned. And then something interesting happens at the conclusion of his teachings. In the beginning, Sri Ramachandra said, to practice, before he gave the list of disciplines, Sri Ramachandra says, it doesn't matter who the seeker is. The state of being a man or a woman or belonging to a particular class in society or ashrama, stage of life, or a state of life, or bearing any special name, none of these is the qualification for practicing devotion. Anybody can practice devotion, he says. Then he said, devotion is the only qualification. If we have willingness to cultivate devotion to God, a little bit faith that God exists and he is the ultimate goal. As Sri Ramakrishna said, God exists and seeing God, knowing God is the ultimate goal of life. That much conviction if we have, and almost everybody has a little bit of devotion. We are devoted to something. Devotion is natural in the human heart. Love is natural in the human heart. So we can follow these disciplines and deepen, strengthen, and purify that devotion. Make it free from selfishness and fear, etc. Then he gives the list of 14 things. If a man has no devotion to me, neither sacrifices nor charities, neither tapas nor the study of Vedas and performance of rituals can help one to see me, Sri Ramachandra says. As a prelude to the list of 14 things, he says, all the other, Sri Krishna said exactly the same thing. Not by Vedas, not by tapas, not by sacrifices can I be achieved. He says, he tells Arjuna, no one can see me in the way that you have seen me when he revealed the cosmic form to him. By any of these disciplines, you can do all the sacrifices and austerities and whatever you can do, Vedic rituals and everything, they will not lead you to this result. Only one thing, by only one means you can see me in this way. Bhaktya tunanyaya labhya aham evam vidho arjuna. By pure devotion only, I can be seen in this form, I can be known, I can be understood, I can be experienced. By pure devotion alone, Sri Krishna says in the Gita, it is possible to know me closely, intimately, to experience me directly only by devotion. Other things are complementary, they will help to some extent, but he emphasizes pure devotion. And Sri Ramachandra says the same thing. Sri Rama says the same thing to Shabari. If a man has no devotion to me, neither sacrifices nor charities, neither tapas nor the study of Vedas and performance of rituals can help one to see me. By bhakti alone am I attained. Therefore, O good lady, I shall speak to you about the means for the attainment of bhakti. With this introduction, Rama gives the 14 steps, starting with holy company and all those things, that list of 14 things you have. If you like, I can give you a copy. Culminating, ending in inquiry into the nature of reality. See, in these 14 includes all the yogas. Raja Yoga has come, Yama Niyama meditation has come, Karma Yoga has come, serving the teacher, seeing God in his presence, serving all beings. Devotion has come in so many ways. And inquiry is also included. Jnana Yoga is also included. Everything is included. It's a broad band spectrum of all various kinds of spiritual disciplines. The question arises, these are all nice, but how can an ordinary person do these things? But who can do all these 14 disciplines and practices? The average seeker can do only a few things at best, beset as he or she is with numerous problems. We don't have to elaborate on this. People have so many concerns, distractions and problems. They have to take care of their families, they have to go to work every day, there will be children to be taken care of, health care problems, some financial concerns, and all these things are there. Job related concerns, everything. In the midst of all of these things, how can anyone, realistically speaking, do these 14 disciplines? Becomes impractical. Sri Rama realizes that. He eventually knows that. He knows he's the Lord, all-knowing, divine himself. Then he says, after saying all these 14 disciplines, finally Sri Rama recognizes the difficulty in doing all these things and concludes his instructions by recommending only one practice of these 14 things, which in these days, that practice is going to recommend is very simple. You're all familiar with that one. But before saying that, he could have said only that one and stopped it there. No, but he wanted to give us the information. He wanted to give us that we should be informed. It should not be so narrow that this is the only way to, then we get the feeling. If he says that only one thing, then people get conclude that this is the only way to God. This is what happens in some other faiths. The teachers may have said many things, but they may have emphasized one thing, and the followers, oh, this is the only way. They go away with that impression, this is the only way to God. People following other disciplines, they are not going to reach the goal. That fanaticism, narrow-mindedness will come. That's why Sri Rama gave a broad spectrum of disciplines. There are so many things. All of these things will lead you to the same goal, namely realization of God. That's the beauty of our teaching, of our spiritual heritage. But he knows that it is difficult for ordinary people to do all these things. Then he says, all right, I recognize it is difficult to do all these things. I'll give you only one simple step. It's like a teacher setting an examination, very difficult examination with 10 questions. Each one is difficult. He just gives the 10 questions in a test. Then he knows people cannot answer all the 10 questions. Nobody, only a genius can answer all the 10 questions. An average student cannot. Then he simplifies his test. He says, all right, if you can answer any two of these, you will get passing grade. If you want extra credit and distinction, then you have to answer more. But just answer two of these 10 questions and you will get a passing grade. Great relief to the students. That's somewhat like that Sri Rama also does when he was giving instructions to Shabari. Then he gave this concluding instruction. O noble lady, whoever is endowed with these disciplines, whether it be woman, man, or brute creation, that person will have bhakti characterized by intense love. Is this so many scriptures and teachers have said so many restrictions, adhikaravada, some things are there like that. You should be born in a certain class of family, you should have these qualifications to inquire about the nature of God, women cannot do certain things. All these restrictions have no basis, they have no basis foundation in our teachings, in the Upanishads, in the teachings of incarnations and saints. Somehow they have crept into society by some teachers, introduced by some teacher, but that's not the case. Sri Rama makes it very clear. It doesn't matter who one is. The only requirement is one should have a desire to know God. A little bit of mumukshutva, jignasa must be there. I must know God. That is enough. You take the example of many great saints. They were not they were barely literate. Like Latu Maharaja, Swami Adbhutananda, Brother Lawrence, he was not a scholar. But he did one thing, and that led him to the goal. And the Russian pilgrim, he just did one thing. He was barely literate. He could read the Bible, and every day he would read the Bible a little bit, given by his father. And he had acquired another book, the Philokalia, the teachings of the desert fathers. And then he would read a passage or two from that Philokalia and repeat his name. He was given a mantra by a Christian teacher, the Jesus mantra, and he stuck to that one practice. One practice is enough to take us to the goal. But teachers give so many different things because no one practice is suitable for everybody. There must be variety in teaching, but there must be freedom in choice. That's what Sri Rama does. Variety in teaching, and individuals have a choice to choose one or two disciplines they are comfortable with, they can do, and that is enough to take them to the goal. That is the beauty of this dharma, of this spiritual heritage. So Sri Rama concludes in this way, O noble lady, whoever is endowed with these disciplines, whether it be woman, man, or brute creation, that person will have devotion characterized by intense love. True devotion means, as Narada says, Intense love for God is devotion. And that love is there in all of us. We have devotion to God, undoubtedly. But it has to be deep and purified and made intense. These practices do that. When such devotion is generated, the truth about my nature will dawn upon such a person. Realizing me in that way, one will attain mukti, liberation, in this very birth. Great positive message, hopeful message. You do one thing with diligence, and you can choose that one thing among a variety of things that I am presenting, and then pursue that persistently, intensely, and you will reach the goal. Next, simplifies it very well. Then he says, if a person has succeeded, therefore it is firmly established that bhakti is the cause of mukti. Devotion emphasizes devotion. Though he talks about inquiry, everything, at the end he says, bhakti is the cause of mukti. That means devotion is the cause of liberation. He says that one. Then he concludes, if a person has succeeded in the first of these disciplines, this is the clue that we are waiting for. If a person has succeeded in the first of these disciplines, namely the association with holy men, holy people, then the others will follow one by one gradually. You do one thing, and then others will naturally follow. Same thing about many disciplines that Sri Krishna has described in various chapters in the Bhagavad Gita. In the second chapter, there's a long list of disciplines and qualities of Sita Prajna, person established in God consciousness. Who can do all of those things? But you do one or two, and others gradually will come in the wake of that one or two, in the trial. That's what Sri Rama says to Shabari. Therefore, it has been declared that bhakti is mukti. He repeats that one. You being endowed with bhakti towards me, devotion towards me, I have come before you. So he emphasized, after saying so many things, practice, the cultivation of holy company is the method that Sri Ramachandra explains as the most important one discipline. If you practice that, everything will come to us. Then he says, you being thus endowed with bhakti towards me, I have come before you. It is certain that you will attain mukti, liberation, Rama is saying to Shabari, concluding instructions. It is certain that you will attain liberation because you have devotion. You have bhakti, you have devotion. I have myself come before you. Now, have you any idea where my handsome wife Sita is? Now he has finished his instruction. In the same shloka, he says, you have any idea? Because his mission is to find Sita. This is only one step in the chain of events that led him eventually to Sita. So that is his main purpose of wandering in the forest, from place to place, from clue to clue. So now he says, here, do you have any idea where my handsome wife Sita is? Who has taken her away? If you know anything about it, please tell me. But before Shabari gives the next clue, Shabari has something to ask. Shabari says, I have seen you, and that is enough for my liberation. I'm ready to go. I will enter a pyre of fire in your presence and give up my body, because the purpose for which the body was given is fulfilled, and then I will achieve liberation. And some great saints can do this. At will, they can give up the body when they think their mission is complete. When they have reached the highest goal, there is no use to keep the body any longer. Sri Ramakrishna says, when you cross the river, you can either keep the boat for other people to use, or you can just leave it. They are not going to carry the boat with you wherever you go. You just leave it at the river bank. Others can use it. That way, see, recently in our own Ramakrishna order, the esteemed Ramakrishna order, one monk did like Swami Damodaranda, you know, many of you may have seen, Swamiji knew him. He gave up his body. He was retired and living as a retired sadhu in a Bellur mutt. And then I had seen him, I had seen him a few times when he came to Chicago Ganges in the 70s and 80s. Then I saw him 2 years ago when I went to Chicago, when I went to Belluramut. There was a big change in his appearance. I really saw, for the only time in my life, I've heard about such things, but for once I saw there was a very unmistakable, fine splendor or glow in his face. I've never seen, I've heard about it, but I had never seen it in anybody. There was, his face was aglow with devotion and joy, without saying anything. I noticed that one and I talked to him a little bit. Now, 2 weeks ago, he just entered Ganga River of his own free will and gave up the body. So Shabari did exactly that. Shabari requests Sri Rama. Sri Rama asks Lakshmana to set up a fire. Then Shabari goes down to Sri Rama and enters the fire. And before she does that, last thing she says is, she gives the clue for Rama to pursue, next step for Rama to do. Sita has been abducted by Ravana, demon king residing in Sri Lanka, and is now in Lanka. Not far away from here is a vast lake called Pampa, Pampa Sarovara Lake. Close to it is a great mountain called Rishyamukha. It's a mountain. There, the monkey leader Sugriva is staying with his four ministers. One of them was Hanuman, in terrible dread of his brother Vali. Vali and Sugriva were Vanara brothers, but they were born enemies. Vali was the stronger than between the two. So Sugriva was afraid of Vali. Vali can get to him and kill him, kill Sugriva. So Sugriva took away all the kingdom, drove away Sugriva. Vali took away all the kingdom from Sugriva, which was due to him, drove Sugriva away, didn't allow him to stay there. And then wherever Sugriva went, Vali pursued him and wanted to kill him, Vali, the brother. So Sugriva finally gets a safe place. There was a mountain, and Sugriva knew that Vali cannot climb that mountain because of the curse of a sage. Some sage was probably doing penance there. Vali must have gone to bother him. The sage must have cursed, if you come here, you will die if you come to this mountain. So Vali stayed away from that one place. Everywhere he could pursue Sugriva. Sugriva goes to that safe refuge, stays there with a few close friends, ministers. So go there, Shabari says to Rama, make friends with Sugriva and he will help you to find Sita. Sita is in Lanka, in captivity, held by Ravana. This information she gives, enters the fire, gives up the body, and Shabari's work is done. Rama then, of course, goes looking for Rishyamukha mountain. And then on his way, one person comes, someone who looked like a Brahmana of the priest class. He comes speaking in very fine language. What happened was, Sugriva was at the top of the mountain. He noticed two people are coming carrying bows and arrows. Oh, he got a suspicion immediately. This must be spies from, or messengers from Vali. Vali himself cannot come here to kill me. He must have sent these two people with bows and arrows to kill me, to get me. So he calls Hanuman, trusted minister. Hanuman, go in disguise and find out who these people are. Are they friends or are they Vali's messengers coming to kill me? Hanuman goes there dressed as a Brahmana and very chaste, fine language. He addresses Rama, Lakshmana and inquires who they are. Rama suspects this is not a simple Brahmin, it must be something else. He must be in disguise. So the story continues, and Sugriva helps with the help of Hanuman, goes to Lanka. The rest of the Ramayana story we know. That is the Shabari story. Shabari provides a very crucial link to Rama to go looking for Sita, and Ramayana story. So I had great joy, I don't know about you. Last 7-8 months when I was studying Rama's instruction to Shabari, it was such a joyful experience. And I've enjoyed it, I hope you too.
Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha
சர்வே சந்து நிராமயாஹ சர்வே பத்ராணி பஷ்யந்து மா கஷ்சித் துக்க பாக் பவேத். ஓம் சாந்தி சாந்தி சாந்தி. ஓம், மே ஆல் பி ஹாப்பி, மே ஆல் பி ஃப்ரீ ஃப்ரம் அஃப்ளிக்ஷன்ஸ், மே ஆல் ரியலைஸ் வாட் இஸ் ஹையஸ்ட் அப்சல்யூட், மே ஆல் ரியலைஸ் தி ட்ரூத், மே நோ ஒன் பி சப்ஜெக்ட் டு மிசரி. ஓம் பீஸ், பீஸ் பி வித்இன் அஸ் ஆல், பீஸ் அண்ட் ஹார்மோனி பி அமங்ஸ்ட் ஆல் பீயிங்ஸ், அண்ட் பீஸ் பி எவ்ரிவேர் இன் நேச்சர். ஹரி ஓம் தத்சத். சர்வம் ஸ்ரீராமகிருஷ்ணார்ப்பணமஸ்து. தேங்க்யூ ஆல்.